Hello, everyone. My name is Robert Winfrey, and what you're about to listen to is an old episode of a podcast I used to host called Everyone Loves a Bad Guy. This particular episode was kind of a long one and features several guests. My original co-host and the guy who spent there, I think, the entire show with me is Robert Cooper. But this also features appearances by Jason Teasley as well as Jesse Starcher, because this episode kicked off a multi-part series from this podcast show that looked at comic book villains. And I happen to know apparently quite a few people who are passionate about comics. In particular, this one focuses on the villains of the X-Men franchise. It's a very popular IP, as you can well imagine, so I had several people who had a bunch of stuff they wanted to come in and talk about. Now, this originally aired February 21st, 2014, so bear in mind, any of the twists and turns or newer characters or whatnot that were introduced in comics or variations and interpretations of them across television or film after that point will not be discussed because, well, they hadn't happened yet. All right. So thank you all very, very much, as always, for listening. It means the world to me. Interact with the product at all if you can. Always appreciated. And with that out of the way, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Special touch to the gentleman, I'm misfortune. To the ladies, I'm surprise. But call me by any name, any way is all the same. I'm the fly in your suit, I'm the devil in your shoe, I'm the demon in your bed.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello, and thank you for joining us here on another edition of Everyone Loves a Bad Guy. I am your host, the authority on evil, Mr. Robert Winfrey. Hope you're all doing pretty well whenever you happen to be listening in, be it live or after the fact. Just thanks for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, tell your friends. I'm trying to build a listenership here. I want someone to pay me for this, and I have to both be good at it and have a large fan base, and I'm working on both of those. So thank you very much. I'm opening the phone lines for tonight's episode. I have a co-host. I'm going to bring him on here in a second. But given the rather popular nature of the topic I'm discussing tonight, I figure, hey, why not? If you have something to say, you're more than welcome to call in, air your opinion, and, you know, I'll give you a forum for that tonight. Tonight we are discussing the ever-popular Marvel comic franchise of the X-Men. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. As many bad guys as we can cram into the next 90 minutes or so, we're going to talk about them. And I'm not here alone. I have a guaranteed co-host. He's going to be here for the duration, unless, you know, something bad happens, which is always possible. But he's a friend of this show. He's been on here before. He's got a couple of shows on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network that he's involved with. He's a member of From the Cheap Seats, which airs Thursday, and he has his own Sentai Rider podcast wherein he discusses all things Japanese, for those of you who have a fetish for that. Ladies and gentlemen, Robert Cooper is here. He's also on the Metal Hammer of Doom. Can't forget to mention that. Coop, welcome back. How you doing tonight?
I'm not doing too bad. I was talking to Jason Teasley, and he's like, yeah, I'm thinking of calling in to Robert's show. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what are they talking? And he's like, oh, X-Men villains. I'm like, oh, shit, that's this week? I have to call into this. Yeah, I love X-Men. And just one of those, you know, comic franchises I can talk all day.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I mentioned that I'm opening up the phone lines. Didn't mention the number. If anyone out there feels compelled to call in, the number to get on the air here is 323-657-0901. And again, we're going to be here for the next 90 minutes and change. If you think we're off base, if you have your own opinion to share, if you have time, give us a call. I will do my darndest to make sure you get on the air unless I get flooded with calls, which, hey, you never know. It might happen. All right. Now, just to kind of give a little bit of background on my exposure to the X-Men did not come in the form of comics, not initially. I was fortunate enough to have discovered, completely by accident, the 90s cartoon that aired on Saturday mornings. And I saw the first episode when it aired live. I was hooked. I did my research. I loved the show. I kind of got into the world of the comics. I fell away from it when I fell away from a lot of things because, this is not a show to get into my personal history, but I spent several years without television or internet access, so I kind of felt a lot of my pastimes and hobbies kind of fell by the wayside. But the show streams on Netflix, and I've been kind of catching up on it because, hey, childhood memory. So, Coop, I'm just kind of curious, how did you get into it? What was your exposure? Where did you start as far as the franchise goes? You know, kind of your background.
Luckily, me and you are fairly close in age. So, yeah, that's where most of my comic book knowledge really started at. Like, I grew up in the early to mid-90s. I loved the X-Men cartoons. Batman animated series is still the best show ever on television, period. And, you know, Spider-Man was great, and Superman, all these shows. And X-Men was always one of my favorites. I think it was because I had a few of the tapes lying around the house as a kid, but they were always just really, really well done. And I found myself really gravitated to a lot of the characters, especially Gambit, my favorite X-Man, because he's awesome.
It's the Southern drawl. You know, you can't fault a guy with a good Cajun accent, right?
This is true. And playing cards.
He made things blow up. You know, you can't get much better than that. All right, we got our first caller of the evening. So before we jump too far into this, I'd like to give this guy his chance to speak. Area code 304. I'm hoping you don't have just this long stream of obscenities, but you're live on the air. Who is this and what are you talking about?
Robert, you know I would never, ever have a long string of obscenities for you or Robert. Hey, it's like Robert and Robert.
Yeah, it's the two Bobs.
Yeah, two Bobs. I mean, hey, at least Blog Talk's working.
Do you think this is the cheap seats or something?
For those of you who don't know, ladies and gentlemen, Jason Teasley has joined us.
How you guys doing?
Not too bad, Jason. How about you? I know you're on kind of a time crunch here tonight, so I'll give you the floor for the next couple of minutes.
I'm good for a few minutes. The girlfriend and mom's occupying themselves eating, so they're sitting here looking at me through the window of Olive Garden. So I'm good for a little bit. They just ordered dessert.
All right. Since Coop brought him up, let's talk about Gambit as kind of a starting point. He's one of those guys who Coop and I talked briefly about this off the air. He's kind of straddled the fence. He was one of the Marauders for a while. He massacred the Morlocks underground. He was one of the Horsemen of Apocalypse, who we'll get to in greater detail in a little bit here. But he's also been one of the, you know, he's been on both sides of the fence here. He's, you know, kind of straddled the line there. So what's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, Gambit has kind of batted for both teams, if you say so. But actually, Gambit growing up from the old 90s X-Men cartoon, which is like a classic, he was actually my favorite X-Men for the longest time. So, and I, like you guys, I came in and heard you guys talk about the Southern drawl. Yeah, I'm a cool little, I love a Cajun accent. Cajun accents are just like the coolest thing ever. That's why I watch Swamp People just to hear them talk.
But, you and me both.
But yeah, I mean, Gambit is one of the, one of the guys that kind of went from good to evil, or vice versa. Actually, he started out as evil, I do believe. But yeah, he did straddle the fence, and just like I said, in the 90s cartoon, which if anybody has never watched it, you should immediately run to Netflix and watch it. It's got the entire run of X-Men from the 90s on there, and it's absolutely amazing. And you'll catch a couple of characters that the two Roberts are talking about tonight, and they're probably truest fashion outside of the actual print comics.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I was actually surprised when I started getting in, when I started, you know, getting into the comics, how accurate the television show was, that, you know, the 90s cartoon was, because a lot of times, you know, depending on the stories, you know, you get liberties taken to make things amenable with, you know, either dumbing it down for children or just, you know, making you know, corporate America happy and whatnot. And I was really surprised at how faithful that was, you know, with Gambit's history, his past in particular. The Dark Phoenix saga was portrayed very accurately, as well as the Phoenix saga. I mean, both sides there.
Yeah, and so, yeah, they did a very good job with the upcoming rendition that you're going to see in movie theaters of Days of Future Past.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites. That partially because I wound up watching, I can't remember if they're actually sequenced where that where Cable's story dovetails straight off of Days of Future Past or not, but I just, you know, time travel has always been one of my favorite things to, you know, fantasize about and to look at, see how it's represented in popular fiction. That one does, and you know, the X-Men series did a good job of handling that in a way that made everything seem like it made sense, which is tricky. I mean, time travel, I mentioned, you know, on Back to the Future, the Long Road to Ruin edition this week, that time travel can mess with your head. It can be heavy stuff. So, you know, kudos to everyone involved for kind of handling that in a very, you know, it made where in a manner where it was accessible to everyone, which is not always the easiest case. But you know, let's kind of you know jump into the deep end here. The I don't know how many people listening to this read 411mania.com or any various of the various sections, but for the last couple of months, there's kind of a running gag I've been experiencing over in the movie zone. There's a couple of guys who do comic related columns every week. I believe Steve Gustafson and Jeremy Thomas. I could be wrong about it. If I'm wrong, feel free to correct me here. And one of them, I can't remember which one, constantly will have a poll about, you know, some topical, about, you know, something topical. And any time Magneto's in the poll, he wins. And it doesn't matter what the poll is. If Magneto's there, he always wins. He's one of those characters that is so kind of perfectly thought out and fleshed out and realized in the medium that he... it's endearing even when he's a bad guy. So, Jason, since you know, you're the one kind of on a time limit, I just want to go to you for your thoughts on Magneto. Let's just, you know, let's just start with Eric Lesher and move on, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I'm actually getting go to hell looks from them as they eat dessert. So, I'll just touch on it real quick, and then quit hijacking the podcast and go eat my cheesecake like a good little boy. But yeah, I mean, Magneto is probably one of the truest. I won't say pure evil, but he is the justified evil, as it were. I mean, he wasn't wrong in his mind doing what he was doing, and he was doing it for basically self-preservation of the mutant race, because he in his mind thought that mutants were superior and they should be the dominant benefactor of the Earth. Which, hey, you can't blame him. I mean, you know, people that can read minds and blow shit up. Yeah, I concede to that. I want to make them my friend, but also he took it. Him and Charles were a perfect balance to each other. Charles sees the good in everything. Eric or Magneto always seen the darker side of things, and he always brought that darker side out in people. Because if anybody has seen X-Men First Class, I think it is an absolute perfect storytelling of, you know, Charles and Magneto as they came up and how they kind of went their separate ways and everything. So, yeah, I mean, Magneto is probably one of the he's a bad guy just because he believes differently.
Well, he's also a bad guy because of the lengths to which he will go and the, you know, kind of moral when you can justify something to yourself. And, you know, this is, you know, old as time, you know, some of the best villains are those who can justify their actions. And he's one of those. But by the same token, when you can do that, you know, the lengths you can go are, they're pretty extreme.
Well, yeah, he does take it, like the old saying goes, you give him an inch, he takes a mile. That is a very understatement with Magneto. You give him an inch, he'll pretty much run with it until eternity.
Yeah, you know, he'll try to create his own floating utopia. If memory serves, he did.
Yeah. But, guys, I appreciate y'all giving me a few minutes. Like I said, I told Winfrey, I told you I'd call in just to say hi and everything. Just, you know, let the two women talk and, you know, let me have my little moment with my friends. I'm going to have to get back in here and eat my cheesecake. And I'll be downloading this soon because I can't stream it live with my phone because I guess Olive Garden here in West Virginia sucks and doesn't have offer Wi-Fi. So I'll turn the podcast back over to you guys. I appreciate you guys letting me come on, and I'll look forward to catching the rest of this podcast later on tonight, guys.
All right, Jason. Thanks for calling in, buddy.
All right. See you later, Winfrey. Later, Coop.
Peace.
All right, Coop. You heard Jason's I'd also like to thank Jason for calling in. He's got his own show. He kind of runs the cheap seats here, which airs live Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Radulichan Broadcasting Network, and conveniently enough, Coop here co-hosts for him. They talk sports. It's a lot of fun. They're rolling right along. So, you know, you heard Jason's kind of take on Magneto. I'm curious about yours, Robert. What do you think about, you know, the character of Magneto, how he's been portrayed across various medias? I mean, I don't think for the Bryan Singer X-Men movies, I don't think you could have done much better than Suri and McKellen to play him as far as the character.
No, not at all. And as for Jason's thoughts on him, I see it a little differently. I don't see him as, like, the perfect ultimate evil or something. Like, I see the guy evil, but it's very justified. Though it is ironically the backstory that he has, that he was, you know,
Holocaust survivor, believes in superiority.
A Holocaust survivor that believes in a perfect race. So ironic. It didn't really
just
get to him. It was like, he's the ultimate. Yeah, I didn't think about it until Jason was like, yeah, he's the ultimate evil. I'm like, wow. And I'm like, well, he is a Holocaust survivor who thinks there's a master, right? That's something. But Magneto is one of those characters that I feel like as time has went on, he's only gotten better, and they've only done more to service the fact that while he is a villain, he's incredibly sympathetic. Sometimes he's even treated as a hero of sorts. I know the fact that he was teamed up with Charles Xavier, that they did allude to that, especially, you know, and we've gotten to see it in the First Class movie. They work together. He's almost been seen as sort of a hero. I feel like now in the comics, like I haven't been reading them too much lately, but I feel like there's almost sort of I want to turn him into an anti-hero more than a villain.
Well, isn't he part of the team right now?
I don't know. I haven't bought a new comic.
I'm a little bit, you know, I'm not up to the, you know, minute as far as continuity goes. Anybody out there, message me on Facebook or Twitter. I'm at Winfrey MMA. That's WynfreeMMA. Do not spell it like Oprah. She bastardized my last name. How dare she? Hit me up and let me know if I'm way off track here. But I believe he's part of the team in the, you know, as things are going at the moment. I could be wrong about that. So let me know if I'm right or wrong. Or, again, call in and just feel free to berate me for not being as up-to-date as I should be. But, you know, I'm kind of with you. You know, Magneto's one of those guys who, well, you know, the fact that, I mean, the X-Men in their, you know, the original comics are kind of a, you know, thinly veiled commentary on the civil rights movement of the, you know, 60s and 70s. And in this case, you just have, you know, mutants with awesome powers instead of, you know, black people. And you have Charles Xavier kind of as the Martin Luther King, you know, school of thought. And then you have Magneto, who's more Malcolm X by any means necessary. And that's, you know, a very kind of brief overview of that. But that's kind of where, you know, he comes from. But he's, you know, when you can, as I mentioned, when you can justify that what you're doing is right, you can do anything. And he's done some pretty gnarly stuff. I mean, he's the only guy who almost killed Wolverine when he debonded the adamantium from his skeleton, if memory serves me correctly.
Oh, yeah, that was so badass. He's just like, he's just going to rip the adamantium out of his bones. Though it did give us that really kind of goofy-looking wild Wolverine with the damn, like, Zorro bandana over the face to make it look like a, you know, like a mask. It was weird. But, yeah, he does just seem like very Malcolm X-esque. Not to mention, he's got the, you know, the Acolytes and Asteroid M and Genosha. Is it Genosha?
Ran Genosha.
Yeah, that guy. I mean, it seems like as the years gone by, it's just he's gotten cooler and cooler shit.
Well, I mean, think about his powers, it's like he manipulates magnetic field. So not only can he fly, well, hover, you know, he's positively charged, the metal around him is negatively charged, he can manipulate metal on a massive scale. I mean, it's you know, the third X-Men gets a lot of crap, and deservedly so. Don't in any way get me wrong about that. There's not a whole lot.
We do not vouch for that damn movie.
No. But the scene where he, you know, takes the whole Golden Gate Bridge and turns it so that all of his troops can get to Alcatraz safely. I mean, it's a bit excessive, and it's clearly just, you know, there to look impressive, but that's something he could do. I mean, for me at least, kind of the perfect scene is in the first X-Men movie when he has all of the guns pointed at the police officers who are holding them, and he fires one of them, and he's actually holding the bullet right next to the guy's forehead. I mean, that's, you know, as far as powers go, you know, there are some that are just kind of ho-hum, and, you know, that's kind of cool. And then, no, I manipulate metal. Your entire world is made of metal. You can't do much about that.
Yeah, I love that for the next two. Those, everything's plastic. And then the way he gets out, he's just like, yeah, I'm going to fucking take all the metal out of your bloodstream and use it to fuck everything up. Oh,
it's
that was
true.
So
it's
awesome.
It's a great sequence. I mean, and just relatively a small amount of metal. I mean, all things considered, it wasn't enough to, you know, I mean, if it's in the guy's bloodstream, it's not enough to cause health problems or anything. So, but, you know, what you can do with the proper amount of power is, it's scary. I mean, he could do pretty much anything.
Yeah, he really can. And I feel like just the fact that he's been made very sympathetic over the years, it just does make it to where it's very hard to really dislike him or even hate him. Sure, the whole, like, I want to exterminate the humans because mutants are the true inheritors of the Earth. It's not exactly the best message. At the same time, the dude survived concentration camps.
You can't fault the guy for feeling the way he does.
Yeah, I mean, he has the correct, well, I don't want to say correct logic, but you really can't fault him. Because, I mean, the dude does have a few, you know,
well, everything he says comes from everything he says in his position, it's not, I mean, I'm not going to agree with it or say, you know, yes, we should, you know, he's correct, but it comes from a place of, you know, logic and emotional, you know, it's a very real position that people would hold in that situation. And it's not just out of left field, and he's not, you know, kind of the cookie cutter maniacal villain. And I mean, at one point, you know, he has Genosha, the island, I believe that's the island, you know, that where mutants are free and, you know, humanity at large has no place. I believe in the comics, he commandeers an asteroid and creates a kind of mutant utopia on it, doesn't he?
Yeah, Asteroid M. I think Genosha got, like, completely and totally destroyed.
Like a settlement or something, yeah. Isn't that where Mastermind was? Something silly like that?
Yeah, let me look it up here. Yeah, I think it got totally massacred by Sentinels or something. Which, it sounds like they were totally just, like, assing.
When you put all the targets in one spot, I mean, it's kind of hard. It's kind of, you know, tactically speaking, to see a target to resist. But yeah, you know, that's a pretty good transition there into the Sentinel, which, you know, again, you and I kind of both came to X-Men, but via the cartoon. The first episode is Night of the Sentinels, and that's when the program comes online. And I couldn't help but, this is one of those odd things about the show, I laughed when I saw the Sentinels, not because they're comical, but because it never seems like anyone else sees them. They're these giant robots that kidnap mutants. They're designed, you know, they have energy beams that they fire, and, I mean, they're forces of destruction, basically, and nobody ever sees them. They're able to sneak up on people. And there's no news footage of them. I always kind of looked at them and went, really? I mean, they're great antagonists because, you know, they're mindless. They're, you know, again, they're machines. They're just programmed to carry out a specific set of instructions. In this case, capture or exterminate mutants. And they're very, and, you know, by the, you know, they're very, you know, like the Terminator from that franchise. They're very basic. They're very simple. But that doesn't make them, you know, they make great antagonists because they're so strong. You know, these aren't things that you can just overcome easily. And especially when you introduce, I think it was Master Mold, who's able to modify the Sentinels depending on their target, right? Or does he just make billions of them and laugh maniacally?
Yeah, I think, if I remember, at least from the cartoon, is that he just mass-produced them. I mean, there might have been, like, a whole fucking Iron Man style where there's one for everything.
Well, you'd have to have a plastic one for Magneto, right? I mean, otherwise...
Oh, that would be...
I mean, it sounds kind of stupid, but you couldn't send a metal one after him.
A plastic one. What's the armor? Saran wrap.
Well, I suppose it could be gold. Gold is non-magnetic.
There we go. It could be gold-plated. You know what would be funny if it gets toppled and start looting pieces of it and selling it?
It wouldn't get anywhere because it's so valuable the humans ambush it. No, I'm here to serve and protect you. Shut up. Your eyes are worth more than my house.
See, there we go.
Okay,
what if they can write?
There we go. But, you know, the Sentinels, they're kind of creepy. You know, they're creepy in the sense that they're soldiers and they're difficult to deal with. But we're actually getting Sentinels in the upcoming X-Men Days of Future Past. And we haven't seen Sentinels yet in any of the X-Men films, which you get a little glimpse of one in the Danger Room in the third movie, but we don't count the third movie as much of anything, so we're ignoring it. But the other thing about the Sentinels was they're produced by one of the Trask, I think Bolivar, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
I could be.
Bolivar.
Oh, yay.
Bolivar.
My memory held up. But, you know, the Sentinels are kind of symptomatic of the conflict between humans without genetic mutation and humans with genetic mutation. You know, or, to use Magneto parlance, you have Homo sapien and Homo superior. And humans are kind of like the penultimate, the quintessential opposition to the X-Men because there's a clash of things that whatever you don't understand, you're afraid of. So just your thoughts specifically on some of these regular old humans that the X-Men have had to contend with, be it Trask coming up with the Sentinels or Senator Robert Kelly becoming president and wishing his anti-mutant agenda. Kind of your thoughts on, there's no superpower, there's nothing special, they're just humans who are in power or they come up with something and don't like mutants.
Well, I think Senator Robert Kelly movies, I'm not sure if he has a counterpart on the in the comics. I haven't looked that far into it.
He does.
But, oh, he does? Okay.
In the comics, actually, he becomes president, if memory serves. He was in the first Days of Future Past event, and I believe Bishop comes back in time to stop Senator Kelly from being assassinated because it spurs an anti-mutant movement, which leads to his dystopian future. He comes back, they stop the event, and he becomes president in large part because he survived an assassination attempt.
Yeah, I remember that. It was such a good comic. Days of Future Past got that awesome, iconic cover of Wolverine just getting obliterated to hell through a Sentinel blast. So good. But Kelly, his creation really, I kind of see that as the logical next step for let's say there are mutants in this reality, our reality, the one we're talking about right now. But, we would have some senator, show up and start trying to make policies purely based off of, opinions on mutants. I mean, we see that every day with regular-ass politicians and their opinions on religion and stuff like that. And,
it's a completely logical
convention. Yeah, it would seem only a matter of time, especially when you look at the comic itself has really just started as a social commentary and really just continued being as such. But you have him. I found him to be pretty cool. The William Stryker from the movie, and what was his counterpart from God Loves Man Kills? Do you remember? Shit.
I believe that same character exists in the comics. He leads a militant anti-mutant organization.
Yeah, probably does. I won't find it. But was it the Friends of Humanity? No, it was Grayson and Creed. Oh, well. Yeah, it was William Stryker, Purifiers.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, him from the movie, especially in the movie, I love. Brian Cox is awesome. He is the shit. I typically, my love for him comes from Super Troopers, if not anything. I love that movie.
Brian Cox, I have nothing but respect for, if for no other reason than because he was a Scottish Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, well, let me see. I'm not a big Lecter guy. I know you are. You're huge on the
deal. I just like Brian Cox is one of those guys that's kind of hard to dislike. He's been around forever, and he always brings his A game.
Yeah. Well, unless it was like Red 2. I don't know if you saw Red 2, but when you cast Catherine Zeta-Jones as a Russian, you're officially doing it wrong.
Hey, her breakout role was as a Spaniard.
Yeah, she looks and sounds Spanish.
It's Welsh.
But she looks and sounds like with the name and the look and stuff, but she does not look Russian, nor did she sound Russian at all.
All right.
Didn't even get close.
You kind of mentioned the guy, one of the Friends of Humanity founders, last name Creed, and I believe in the comics, isn't he the son of Victor Creed, also known as Sabretooth?
I'm not sure. The computer went full retard on me. Never go full retard.
It's something like that. It's a very distinct familial relation. I mean, if memory serves, in the comic, Wolverine exposes him as the son of a mutant, and everyone kind of abandons him because his bloodline is no longer pure.
Oh, yeah, it was like that one time on Mari where the white power leader got revealed that there were black ancestors in his family.
I'll take your word for it. I don't watch Mari.
Oh, I don't either. I saw it on the internet, and I was like, oh, that's great. But, yeah, I think I vaguely remember hearing about that. But the other one, I was just saying another human that I'd like to mention is one I mentioned before the show is Arcade. Who, while not being exactly hugely threatening, he's not Magneto or Apocalypse or anything. He's pretty entertaining. He's just like this technical genius that decided to have fun and make a bunch of game, like, you know, almost like a game show Funhouse of Death for his own fun and giggles.
You know, you gotta have guys like that.
Oh yeah, you know, you have to have your crazy ass Funhouse of Death people. Or if you're from TNA, it'd be the Clockwork Orange House of Fun Max.
Thanks to Jesse Starcher, who's playing the home game, Graydon Creed, founder of the Friends of Humanity, was the son of Sabretooth and Mystique. So thank you, Jesse, for that. Just the tad. So I just kind of wanted to talk, since we brought him up, I wanted to talk about Sabretooth. He's an interesting character, and, you know, for as much as there is wrong with the X-Men Origins Wolverine movie, I really kind of dug Liev Schreiber and his portrayal of Sabretooth. So, kind of your thoughts on that one. I mean, his appearance in the first X-Men movie looked like Sabretooth, but the character wasn't given anything to do other than stand there, look menacing, and run into bars that Magneto closed in front of him.
Yeah, he was just kind of a Sabretooth look only. Like, he didn't really act that well. Hell, I think the best sub-villain in those movies, besides, you know, Rebecca Romijn as Mystique, and, you know, it's very Ian McKellen. I think Ray Park was off Toad.
Oh, yeah. Ray Park's always awesome.
That is true. I forget, there was one time somebody was like, oh, yeah, he's going to be cast as so-and-so. And I was like, oh, it's going to be awesome. And I forgot he's not necessarily an actor.
No. His martial arts background is phenomenal.
He did play baseball.
He did. He's also in Second Mortal Kombat, which, God, I hate that movie. But especially when the first one was so good.
Yeah, it was pretty solid. I remember I bought it from my grandma's yard sale, the first one. Pretty good. Pretty solid movie.
It's one of, like, two all W.S. Anderson movies I enjoy.
What's the other one?
the first Resident Evil has some of it.
Yeah, it was solid. I keep having to explain to my stepdad the reason they exist is because Star and the director are married, so they just, you know, as long as it shits out of profit, they're good. But yeah, Sabretooth in the comics, like, I don't have a huge history with him as I do, like, Apocalypse or Magneto, but I always found him interesting, especially when you bring him into Wolverine's comics and they try to, you know, add some interesting stuff. I remember the last storyline I read of Wolverine and Sabretooth. Apparently they were, it was alleged that they were spirits of wild animals. That was weird.
there were some weird ones. I mean, but he's kind of he has a lesser healing factor than Wolverine, if memory serves. But he still has
it. I guess maybe it's their way of saying, like, oh, it's because he's bigger, he won't need it. I don't know, that's how I kind of just saw it.
But I believe Wolverine kills him at
once. Oh, I'm sure he does.
I mean, just...
Oh, yeah, I mean, eventually every great villain and or hero gets their untimely demise.
Well, you know, you brought up one of the other ones that I definitely wanted to talk about. One of the big ones, actually, in the form of Apocalypse.
I love Apocalypse.
Me too. He, Magneto is such an interesting character, but if you were to ask me, like, my favorite X-Men villain, I would, you know, 9 times out of 10, unless you kind of catch me off guard and Magneto is, for some reason, my default, I'll go with Apocalypse every time.
Yeah, he's so much different. Like, Magneto does, he feels like an anti-hero at some parts. And they really kind of lessened him as a villain and more as just like a sympathetic anti-hero of sorts. But Apocalypse is pure, unadulterated evil. And I love how, one, he's allegedly the first mutant, and he's also thousands of years old and an amazing scientist. And the Age of Apocalypse was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, oh, he's such an interesting character. I mean, he's a, allegedly he's like the first mutant, but he controls the molecules of his. I mean, his powers are never actually defined in the conventional sense. He just has these, you know, awesome powers, and they just kind of come up with excuses to fit said powers, because when you're that big of a bad guy, you know, do you really need to know why he's able to do these awesome things? Or is it enough that he's sitting here tearing through the X-Men left and right?
Yeah, he always does feel like that final boss of sorts, because I did forget that was his powers. He can manipulate the molecules in his body, which pretty much means he can just do anything and everything he wants.
He can also blast. He can also fire energy blasts. He's got access to the Celestials' technology. He's a brilliant scientist. I mean, it's easier to say what he can't do.
Well, he can't bend metal.
Okay, I'll give you. But yeah, Age of Apocalypse is, you know, that's one of those awesome, you know, iconic, you know, comic book arcs, and has
it's
been
so
done 90s. Very. It is. There's so much fun that's had within it, you know?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. It brought us a lot of really, really cool stuff. Like, I think X-Man, that was one thing I remember that came from that. And you also had a lot of spinoffs from it because, you know, you had a lot of failed Marvel spinoffs in the 90s. But I feel like those were the coolest ones because dystopian futures always seem to be much more interesting than, let's say, what they tried with the 2099 universe, which was a techno, futuristic technology-driven dystopian future. I always thought Apocalyptic ones are so cool. You have your one-handed Wolverine and all that. Yeah, Apocalypse, he's one of those
villains that I
always... And
Cable's trying to find a way to bring him down.
Cable was awesome. Didn't Cable come from his future?
Yeah, that's actually how it came about, if memory serves, because... Bishop's interference in the timeline wound up destroying his timeline. So he went back in time to kind of mess with it and wound up stopping Apocalypse from releasing the techno-organic virus. But Cable, and he's been fighting Apocalypse his entire life.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, because he's the son of Scott Summers and Jean Grey. Woo-hoo. Yeah, I remember that now. It's been a while since I've read up on Cable. But yeah, Cable was always
badass.
That one. Cable is such a badass. He really is, especially when you consider just the lengths that he's went. I mean, he went back in fucking time just to stop Apocalypse. So technically, if you want to go back in time, he totally could have just went back in time to like 1000 AD or something, whenever Apocalypse was born. Just kill him before he was, kill him as a baby, you know.
Something like that, yeah.
You know, those logic jumps.
Yeah, I don't know. Limited power. You can only travel back as far, you know, there's a correlation between the amount of power you can generate and how far back you can go, I suppose. No, but, you know, Apocalypse is also fun because he's kind of that grandiose villain, too. I mean, he tries, you know, he has his enforcers, who he refers to as his horsemen, because he's Apocalypse. Judeo-Christian
Apocalypse. And it's a very impressive list of horsemen.
I was actually looking it over, but I mean, you know, one of the first ones I remember was he got Angel, Warren Worthington III, and converted him into Death. He wound up making Gambit Death at one point, and I mean, probably most impressively, he turned the Hulk into War. I mean, anybody who can actually mess with the Hulk and get him to, like, you know, kind of do your bidding, you know, that's impressive. That's not anything to laugh at. He turned the Hulk into his horseman of war. I mean, hey, the Hulk did what Apocalypse told him to. Think about it.
That is pretty impressive. That's like trying to herd cats.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. But, yeah, he's one of the better, like, big bads that I was always kind of disappointed he never got more crossover than he did. He always, I mean, I know the Avengers and him have kind of squared off every now and then, but to me, like, if he were to, I mean, team up or just, you know, kind of go head-to-head with Thanos even would just lead to so much awesome. There's so much potential there, and he always kind of seems, I may be wrong, but he always, you know, kind of seems to be with the X-Men and their villain kind of first and foremost, and everyone else just kind of lets them handle him.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I found the list of the Four Horsemen. Let's see. He got Archangel to be Death. Got Caliban, or vaguely, got Gambit. Wolverine. Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting. See,
well,
Famine.
Wasn't he the one who rebonded Adamantium to Wolverine's skeleton?
I think so. That would definitely make sense. Well,
I believe
he got Sunfire. He got Sunfire to be Famine.
Not
pretty
too bad.
Cool. Jesus, Caliban gets like everything. They got Caliban for Pestilence too. But the one I'm most impressed at is a Polaris.
Mm.
He managed to get Polaris over there as a Pestilence, and then yeah, Hulk as War is still the coolest thing ever.
Well, especially what he did with him. Didn't he have him fight Thor? Or am I confusing Onslaught with Apocalypse?
Oh, Onslaught. I think a lot of people wanted to forget that, but I always thought Onslaught was kind of cool.
I did too. I mean, I did some search on him, and you know, how he comes about is maybe a little bit hokey in some respects, but it's an interesting concept of being, I mean, first of all, he's pure psionic energy, but he was created kind of by the Charles Xavier was able to get into Magneto's mind, put him in a catatonic state, but you know, the mind of Magneto kind of melded with every negative thought that Charles Xavier had ever had, and it wound up physically manifesting itself as psionic energy. And he gains power by absorbing other mutants. He's just, I mean, I understand why people are kind of down on it, but, you know, from what I've seen, he's, you know, he's kind of a badass, and he'll definitely mess with your world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the dude is just absolutely scary as shit. Let's see, the Age of Apocalypse Horsemen. Oh, yeah, those are awesome. Especially when they had Mr. Sinister here.
Ooh. Oh, Mr. Sinister. Go ahead and talk to me about Mr. Sinister. He's one that, again, my first exposure was from the comics when he was trying to... This is one of those things that I didn't understand as a child, but he's trying to create the master race of mutants by you know, combining the DNA of Scott and Jean. And there's this one scene where he has this, like, giant... that he uses to extract the genetic material, and rewatching it as an adult, part of me went, what, tentacle rape?
I've seen enough hentai to know where this is going.
Yeah, I'll put you there. Oh, all right, we got another caller. All right, area code 740. You're live and on the air. What's up?
Hey, guys, what's up? It's Jesse Starcher. How's it going?
Hey, Jesse, not too bad. How about you?
Hey, not bad. All right, so we're talking X-Men villains. You guys are doing
yep.
a great job.
Thank you very much.
Great job so far. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think you guys were just getting into Mr. Sinister, right?
We just yep. brought him up, yeah.
Okay. Now, prior to that, you'd mentioned Onslaught. You'd said that he was pretty powerful. The first time they actually was able to, you know, before with the it was the lead-in to when Onslaught made his name known, was when Juggernaut was, like, shot halfway across the nation, I believe. Well, that could have been a few states or something like that. And when he landed, I think Jean Grey found him, or Marvel Girl, or whoever, and says, well, what, you know, what happened to you? And Juggernaut just looks at him and looks at her and says, well, Onslaught is coming. And he's absolutely 100% petrified of Onslaught. One of my favorite... I'd say Onslaught's probably one of my favorite villains in the X-Men universe.
Well, that's a heck of an introduction.
Yeah. Well, and what's crazy is that when that happened, it was a year before stuff really started rolling and Onslaught started getting, you know, they started figuring out who Onslaught was. And of course, there was a big, you know how it was back in the 90s. They're going to gimmick that crap out. And try and get as much sales as possible. But for a year, they kept dropping clues, and everybody's like, who the heck is Onslaught? And then I can remember the big reveal, it being, you know, Charles Xavier, and everybody just, you know, of course, from there on out, it kind of, not only did it mess with the X-Men, but, I mean, it crossed over and made a huge impact on the Marvel Universe itself.
Well, Onslaught was one of those villains that, you know, Avengers Assemble, if memory serves me, correct?
Yeah. Yes. And what had happened is a big portion of Marvel's heroes died in the battle with Onslaught, and there was a series called Heroes Reborn, which is not very well. A lot of people didn't like that too well, but I don't know if you remember, right? There were a lot of heroes that were dead from the original Marvel Universe and a bunch of offshoot books kind of restarting, like Iron Man, The Avengers, just like you're saying. There are a few other books that I think The Hulk was one of them also, but very far-reaching.
I was going to say, if memory serves, they all, like, died to defeat him. They were, like, stood in his psionic energy and dispersed it. Everyone thought they died, and didn't they just, like, re-exist in the classic kind of comic book trope? You know, they now exist in
alternate
pocket universe created
yeah.
by... Well, that actually worked out pretty well for the Hulk, because when he came back, he drew energy from said pocket universe, which just made him even stronger than he was before.
Yep. I think I read the trades. There's like four or five trades, maybe about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago that tried to encapsulate, you know, Onslaught, getting into every book, and they put, you know, the important parts in there. But yeah, Onslaught, definitely one of my favorite. I have a few others here. If you guys got the time, can I roll down?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go for it.
All right. Okay, number two. I think this is another one that I was thinking of, and you guys had brought it up earlier, The Age of Apocalypse. Do you guys by chance remember the catalyst that brought about The Age of Apocalypse?
I may be wrong, but off the top of my head, I believe it was Bishop going, again, my memories of this are not either, you know, and I haven't quite done all the necessary research, but
Go ahead.
I was going to say, what I remember most is it came about kind of because Bishop was time traveling, trying to fix his present and Cable existing in like 1,000 years after Bishop's time, and Bishop's time traveling was screwing with Cable's future, so he wound up going back and trying to...
I think you're a little bit ahead of yourself, because there's a couple storylines where that exactly happens, what you're talking about.
Okay.
They're both screwing each other through the time stream. This is actually a guy by the name of Legion. Legion was the son of Xavier and a lady that I think was an Israeli lady, I believe. And he had multiple personality disorder. And at one point, what had happened is he was actually in a catatonic state, awoke, and his mind had become one again. And he decided he wanted to help his dad out. And what he decided he'd do, Legion was a massively powerful mutant, by the way. What he decided he would do is he would just go back in time and kill Magneto. But instead, what had happened is when he went back, Magneto and Xavier were both together. And he went to go kill Magneto, and of course Xavier steps in front, and he kills Xavier, and there goes the Age of Apocalypse.
There goes the voice of reason, you know.
But anyway, yeah, Legion's up there. Number three is just a big encapsulation of themselves. I think sometimes a lot of their worst enemies are themselves. What you guys have mentioned earlier, Archangel. Granted, I don't think he was meaning to attack the X-Men, but he was an X-Men at one point and was attacking them. There was Dark Beast from the Age of Apocalypse. I don't know if you guys remember much of him and all.
He was Bishop fucked up.
I tell you what, I wasn't a big fan of him, but I could just remember he abducted the Beast, the original Beast, and threw him in some kind of cellar or something, was going around pretending like to be the real Beast and was really messing with people.
Why would you piss off Hank McCoy?
Because he's just as smart as Hank McCoy, but he's evil.
And then we got what you were talking about there, Winfrey, which was Bishop. Bishop has, you know how Bishop and Cable were actually going at it. Bishop is actually an enemy of the X-Men. If you guys remember, I think they touched on this in the cartoon where Bishop came back because there was a traitor. And
yeah,
it wound up actually being Mystique
trying to... It was Mystique impersonating Gambit, but everyone thinks it's Gambit because, you know, Mystique shapeshifts. Which is actually, I believe we're going to see that sequence, you know, I would assume early on in the upcoming Days of Future Past storyline.
I love Bishop as a character. And when I heard that he was coming out in the movie, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be awesome. I really... well, you know how movies are, you know, sometimes not so true to the source material. I just hope they don't mess with him too much.
Well, he's got a sweet power, which is one of the things about this that I like. He absorbs energy and redirects it. I mean, that was my first memory of him is Gambit shoots him with one of his throwing cards, and he then blasts Gambit, and he says, this is what I do. This is my mutant power. And Wolverine's response is he unsheathes his claws and says, do you want to try redirecting these?
Oh, yeah. That's some good stuff. That's some good stuff right there. But anyway, Bishop is now an enemy of the X-Men at this point in time in continuity. He was chasing down I won't get into the storyline, but basically he's been an enemy of the X-Men for a little while now, ever since a storyline called the Messiah Complex. I've got two more that are X-Men, but you know, are now enemies of the X-Men, and one of those is Cyclops.
I'm trying to remember the storyline after he had created, it was in the, wasn't it in the X-Men versus Avengers crossover event?
Yes.
He got that.
Absolutely.
After he and Wolverine are finally kind of making peace, he tells this child, do whatever you think is right, and the kid winds up like, I forget the whole thing, but this poor child winds up killing a bunch of people. And Cyclops' decision to do that is, you know, Wolverine just kind of has had it at that point.
Now, well, there's a, I believe the culmination of events in the, I can't say that I've read it, I just read what I did off the internet and heard through podcasts, but I believe the culmination of events that makes Cyclops an enemy of the X-Men, he kills Xavier for like the fifth. Well, Xavier's been dead like five or six times throughout the X-Men comics.
It's comics. Everyone's died at some point. Right?
But Cyclops actually killed him, and of course now you know how you mentioned Magneto as part of the team. He's actually running around with Cyclops at this point in time. So there's like an offshoot of the X-Men. Which is Cyclops and a couple others, which it's pretty interesting. And the final one, which is might be one, I don't want to steal your thunder, but I'll bring it up, is Dark Phoenix.
We have not gotten to that one yet, but yeah, that was immediately on the horizon. That was on the horizon, so you're not stealing thunder or anything.
Well, I won't go into what happened with her, but that's I'd say that's probably the top one of the X-Men that's turned on the X-Men and caused that, you know, so much trouble. And the last and final one,
intergalactic cosmic beings. I eat stars. Yeah, that can cause problems.
Yeah, there's problems. There's problems there. But the last and final one is, I think probably the greatest enemy of them all is humanity for the X-Men. And you mentioned there were a couple groups like Graydon Creed was running, but humanity has shunned. Obviously, if somebody's different from you, you know, that you're going to shun that person in some way, or there's a possibility that we're going to screw it up somehow. We could all be the same, and we'll figure out if you got a different color hair on your head, we're going to, obviously, shun you in some way. And I think that was one of the biggest things when the X-Men were first brought in, was that, you know, they were trying to promote equality. Obviously, it was subtle, but, you know, these guys were obviously different, and their struggle, just like Xavier's struggle, was to try and get humanity to accept these different people. And I think that was probably number one on my list. I posted an article. I don't know if you had a chance to read it yet, guys, but there was a really interesting thing I'd read where humanity, made some decisions on the X-Men where in a legal court of law, we have now ruled that the X-Men are not human. And the reason was because this is all legit. This is all in the law. You know, what had happened is there was a court case where you guys remember the 1990s Toy Biz X-Men action figures?
Yeah.
Okay. What they had done is they would, when they would import these things over, there's two distinctions for a toy. There's either a doll, which has human-like figures, or there's a toy, which is not considered human in any way. So what happens is dolls are taxed heavily when they're imported in, more than toys are. So what had happened is somebody took it to the court saying, well, these X-Men figures, Toy Biz's X-Men figures, they're making all this money off here, when in fact they should be taxed like double or whatever. And so it went through the courts to determine if the X-Men were actually considered human or not. And the result is that they are not human.
The American legal system. Apparently we have nothing better to do with our time.
I mean, I wonder how many taxpayer dollars we actually spent,
I would assume not a whole lot. That was probably just lawyers who got, got to line their pockets because executives don't want to pay extra taxes. I don't know.
The amount of
asinine lawsuits. Our society is way too litigious, but different conversation than the one we're having here.
I appreciate you guys letting me rant off. But you guys have got some great examples. I love listening to the podcast and everything like that. I appreciate you guys letting me be on here. Coop, buddy, I'm looking forward to Grand Magus.
Oh yeah. Oh, the band is so good.
It's gonna be some good stuff. And Winfrey, buddy, I love the Back to the Future podcast, the Long Road to Ruin. That was awesome. I had a good time.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Definitely.
I'll let you guys get back to it.
Hey, I did too, man. I had fun listening to you guys. My wife was sitting here, and of course you saw I was booing Radulich on Facebook because he was poo-pooing all over too. And my wife, she's sitting there agreeing with him. I'm like, I'll boo you too. You can't do that. But I'll let you guys get back to it. Thank you very much for letting me call in. I hope you guys have a good night, all right?
All right, Jesse, thanks for calling in. Have a good night, too.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Coop, he brought up Dark Phoenix, so let's kind of jump into that one.
Yeah.
The Phoenix Saga and the follow-up Dark Phoenix Saga, that's one of those, incredibly iconic and beloved, comic book arcs. So I want your thoughts on that, because, again, my first experience was through the television show, which the first time I saw, they set that whole series up in the episode prior where you have the spirit drinker that accidentally crashes on Earth. I think it's the first time you meet Lady Deathstrike in there, and she and Wolverine encounter the creature. But it ends with the cliffhanger, but with the teaser about the Phoenix Saga is coming. And I have this very distinct memory as a kid just seeing the preview for that and getting goosebumps. So I'm curious, how did that whole thing play for you, over any given medium? And we're ignoring the god-awful variant thereof.
Oh, God. The first two movies were really good. The first exposure I had to the Phoenix and Dark Phoenix saga was through the X-Men encyclopedia I used to read all damn day because my parents got it for me for one Christmas. It was one of those Dorland Kinsley, the kind of larger sized comic book encyclopedias.
Okay.
They had one for Spider-Man, they had one for X-Men. Yeah, I used to read that all the time, and I was like, oh yeah, that sounds really cool. And as I looked into the Dark Phoenix saga through stuff like Wikipedia and stuff, I can definitely see why it's so iconic. Because, it's pretty much, in the Phoenix saga, the leading up to that is, Scott trying his ass off to save Jean. Because her ass is getting, wasn't she getting condemned to death by the Shi'ar Empire?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, based on my memory, the Phoenix entity wound up absorbing the energy of a sun to fight off, to either contain the M-Kron crystal or to fight off some threat to the X-Men. I forget, I'm a little hazy on the specifics. But this whole star wound up going supernova. It obliterated a solar system, killed billions of people, and the Shi'ar demanded that the Phoenix entity be held accountable for its actions. The X-Men objected because it was possessing Jean at the time, and you got the big battle on the moon that, if memory serves, concludes with Jean killing herself to prevent the Phoenix from doing any more harm. I may be wrong about that.
I think that's how it worked. And then she was apparently found later in suspended animation. That's how all things are.
Well, the
and come.
Okay, let's see if I can remember this correctly. Because after the Phoenix did that, there was a big to-do about from the executives that you couldn't bring back Jean Grey unless she was completely blameless of, I don't know what you even call that, wiping out a solar system. So they concocted the story that the Phoenix had actually just taken her form and she was actually in a cocoon of some kind in the bottom of Long Island Sound. And that was how they brought Jean back without having to deal with the repercussions of, hey, I, wiped out whole world.
No, it's just one of those, I did a few bad things, but I'm back, right? That's cool.
Yeah. But, it's...
But, she was awesome. That's pretty much how I think of it. She's, like, uber, super, mega, hyper-powered. And she's another one of those villains that I think deserved a team-up of epic proportion. Since, if that saga would have happened, well, then again, I think they tried to have some sort of real saga recently. But, if it were modern-day Marvel or DC, modern-day comics where every single year is a giant event, I think the Phoenix Saga would definitely be worthy of that now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the time it was just the X-Men and the Shi'ar Empire that kind of had it. But, she consumes a star, kills billions of people. As powerful as the Phoenix Entity is, and for those of you who don't know, it's like this eternal cosmic force.
It's like a giant battery.
Kind of. I mean, it's huge. I mean, and you have various forms. I mean, because Jean, in addition to being Dark Phoenix, she eventually learns to control the power and becomes the White Crown of the Phoenix, and you have... And then, it's even bad. I mean, if memory serves, what kind of precipitates the Avengers versus X-Men storyline is the Phoenix Force disseminates itself into, the five mutants, and you get the Phoenix Five, who are just, because of the Phoenix Force, unbelievably powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I'm kind of going off the top of my head here, but yeah, anything that powerful, I mean, like I said, we got it in that sense, disseminated into five other people, and we got the Avengers versus X-Men. Nowadays, if you had just the Phoenix Force in one body and one being, oh, you'd have everything. Everything would be there to try and fight it. It would be a huge crossover event, of which there have to be at least like two a year.
Yeah, and every comic must be roped into it, regardless of whether or not it had anything to do with it or not.
Yes, cameos. Hey, butterfly effects, right?
Yeah, or back when me and my stepdad first started buying comics from our local shop at the time. We're like, oh, yeah, Civil War. If it's got Civil War on it, we got to buy it. Half of those didn't have anything to do with it. At least main story. Like, yeah, it's the same setting, but otherwise. Lydia, Dark Phoenix is awesome. I remember we started talking about Mr. Sinister, but we never actually really got much in.
Go ahead.
Actually, I was reading up on him, man. That dude is what's up to his namesake.
He's really kind of an odd guy because I can't remember his power. I mean, again, my memory of him from the cartoon, in addition to having, he has a creepy voice. I mean, I don't know. But he was creepy.
He's telepathic. He can control his body on a cellular level. He can shape. He can teleport. And he's a scientific genius.
Yeah, and my primary memory is nobody can hurt him except for Cyclops, because for some reason he can't regenerate from Cyclops' energy blasts.
Yeah, I think it was. I was reading the wiki page, and there was some alleged thought that he was maybe the third Summers brother, because him and he had Cyclops and Havoc. But I think that was debunked when we got Vulcan, who ended up being the third Summers. But
hey.
Mr. Sinister, apparently he was the leader of the Marauders, the ones that Gambit was a part of, that killed all the Morlocks, and the dude just runs like a bunch of really creepy and kind of messed up genetic experiments all the time.
Genetics is one of those things that when you play around with it, to the level that he's, it's one of those things where everyone kind of has a different line in the sand, but when you're trying to do what he's doing, which is create the genetically perfect mutant, I believe in this case it was, it's basically the child of Scott and Jean, which I believe is Nate. Once being Cable, just technically speaking, but the level of manipulation that he's trying to create, that he's trying to have, and the level of control he's trying to exert is, it's creepy. I don't think anybody looks at what he does and can kind of agree with him, or like you have with other guys like Magneto, or to varying degrees Apocalypse, because some of the things that he says kind of make sense.
Sinister's just kind of fucked up. And actually, reading his wiki page as we're talking, I'd forgotten that he was the reason we got Cable. It says that he cloned Madeline Pryor from Jean Grey for the purpose of having her mate with Cyclops, and they produced a son named Nathan.
Which led into the whole sequence of Pryor isn't really a person, she's a clone, which let Scott conveniently get back together with Jean.
Yeah.
But he's not necessarily the most powerful. I mean, but you know, he's the Machiavellian guy. He's the planner. He's the one who's always at least a step ahead of whatever you're trying to do. And he's,
yeah.
You know, like one of my primary memories is, I don't know who did his voice for the cartoon, but God, he was creepy. I don't know what kind of, you know, synthesizer or whatnot they ran his voice through, because it wasn't just a guy who could do that with his, I don't think it could have been. But whatever they did to it, it effectively, it got the impression across. If the, you know, the color scheme and the, you know, artistic choice in how to represent him didn't, the way he sounded left, removed all doubt that, no, this is a bad guy.
Yeah, it says his voice actor was Christopher Britton, though he doesn't really have many other voice acting roles that are all that, you know, prevalent. He had a role in Death Note, though. Oh,
that's cool.
He did have a really neat voice. There was a lot of really good voice acting.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that I can't unsee, or I guess unhear, is every time Charles Xavier talks, one, I want it to be Patrick Stewart.
Darn right.
And every time Wolverine speaks, I keep expecting Steve Bloom. Because that dude... Because even though Steve Bloom is like the best voice actor ever and has many an iconic anime role, he, like, when he did Wolverine, it's like, so this is what we've been missing.
It made sense. I mean, it was like, and this is not an insult, but I almost felt like Hugh Jackman, as awesome as he is at playing Wolverine, when I first heard him in, you know, the first movie, it was kind of a letdown because it's not, you know, it's not Steve Bloom. It's not the voice that
I don't think Steve Bloom did it until the games. I don't remember who did it for the. I don't think it was Steve Bloom for the animated. So let me just look this up here.
Sorry, I'm probably wrong. But yeah, whoever did it in the animated series, I always just kind of went, you know, that's what Wolverine's supposed to sound like. And this is not a knock on Hugh Jackman, because I love, he's the perfect guy to play Wolverine. He's got a great grasp of the character. The quality of the films that he's in, you know, good or bad, has very little to do with his ability to be Logan.
Yeah, his in the 90s animated series, his voiced by Carthol J. Dodd.
Okay.
X-Men Evolution, he was voiced by Scott McNeil. I have heard of him, and Steve Bloom did it in Wolverine and the X-Men. Yeah, Steve Bloom's the guy that does it for all the... I think he's been doing it for a lot of the games recently, and he did Wolverine and the X-Men, which was actually a really good show. I'm sad that it didn't get an extra season.
I'm pissed. I mean, we would have got Age of Apocalypse in the second season.
I know.
Is there a Kickstarter for that, for a second season of that?
I do not know, but you know what? If something deserves it, I think that is it. I forget what... cause it such a pain in the ass. Huh.
Ratings, I think. And Joss Whedon.
Kevin, okay. Apparently he was voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson and something. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, is there anyone that we haven't touched on that you want to kind of get out there?
Yes. Juggernaut, as
Jesse
mentioned.
We have not had Juggernaut yet.
Yeah, he's Juggernaut, bitch.
Yes. I still laugh at that. Not Vinnie Jones doing it in the movie, because that was awful. I love Vinny Jones, but their version of Juggernaut was awful. Let's just get that out there right now.
Yeah,
but
it was not very good.
But the sound edit that someone did for the cartoon, it's on YouTube. If anyone has not seen it and you're listening to this, on YouTube there is someone went through and edited so everything the Juggernaut says is. Are you kidding? I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. So someone
else. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. Kaboom.
And they got Vinny Jones to say it in the movie, but. For anyone who doesn't know, Juggernaut is not actually a mutant. If you go by canon,
the Ruby of Sidorak, right?
Yeah, he is the avatar of Sidorak. He found the bands of Sidorak, and that's what has given him his power. He's unstoppable, he's big, you know. He's a huge force, and he's a gigantic threat because he's impossible to stop. But he is not a mutant. It's, magical power that he has been bestowed with. He's not... And, which was like one of my primary gripes with the character in the movie. Like, no, he's not a mutant. He, in fact, Juggernaut hates mutants, if memory serves. I mean, isn't he Charles Xavier's stepbrother or something?
Yep, they're related.
And he just doesn't like mutants at all. And his power does not come from. Anytime someone accuses him of being a mutant, he gets pissed off. Like, no, I'm not a freak. I'm not a mutant. I obtained these by finding the bands of Sidorak. You know, I'm an archaeologist. I imagine, you know, Indiana Jones found the Crimson Bands of Sidorak, put them on, and became Juggernaut. You know, he's not a mutant. He tracked them down, put them on, and has obtained power that way. But anyway,
yeah, I
about
loved his introduction. What?
Go ahead.
I loved his introduction, too. Like he just pretty much just, like, breaks through the entire school looking for Xavier. Like,
Someone hired him to capture Xavier or something, and he just, nobody can stop him.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, it's really hard to, I guess it's just hard to fathom the fact that some of these characters have been around so long.
Oh, yeah, well, like, this series started in the 60s, I think, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's probably older than Hal, our parents, because I was probably as old as mine. Yeah, like the Juggernaut's from the 60s, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah. Because I guess some comics, you just don't really think about it, especially when a lot of the really defining comics come from the 80s and the 90s. You know, 60s and 70s were kind of weird.
A little weird.
But yeah, Juggernaut was definitely one of those. He was a really good villain, though. Kind of like Magneto, actually much more like Magneto. He's actually more of a hero now, if I'm not mistaken.
He's been known to team up with them more than oppose them at this point, I think.
Yeah,
I guess they coincide.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty cool. That's something that I've noticed a lot with X-Men is that oftentimes their villains tend to, a lot of them tend to shift towards more of either a less dark, you know, a less of a dark tone, or some of them even become heroes, which is interesting because I think it's because they fight some.
Let me pose this to you. They're not designed, I'm not going to go into, you know, I'll use kind of maybe some, you know, unhappy pro wrestling parlance here, but they're designed as shades of gray characters. They're not strictly face or heel. You know, Juggernaut or Magneto, they're characters. So they're, whether their actions fall on, objectively speaking, the good side or bad side, they are in tune with the actions of the character. And, you know, again, over time, they may go, you know, they may fall more onto good, you know, objectively speaking good or objectively speaking evil. They may switch back and forth, but they're very much fleshed out characters and designed to be, you know, and their actions fall in line with their character. So when they move on either side of the spectrum, good or bad, it makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I guess I'd look at Cyclops as sort of your Ricky Steamboat sort. You know, it's a guy that's always going to be sort of good. Mister can be, oh, who's a really good heel that always stayed heel? I don't know.
Flair had a good run in the 80s.
I was thinking maybe Ted DiBiase.
Million Dollar Man. Yeah, that could work.
I mean, I don't think he ever really turned face until he became a legend, and then he was just like, and everybody's like, oh, I remember.
And at that point, there's just so much history that you can't boo, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. You know, I think you're right. It is very much like very professional wrestling.
Jess Starcher suggested the Iron Sheik.
See, the Iron Sheik. Well, I don't think he ever did play a face, but I was thinking more towards like an evil heel. I was thinking more towards like an evil heel.
The Sheik is evil. He made Bob Backlund humble. Put him in the camel clutch. I can't do it.
Then break his back and make his humble and fuck his asshole. Fuck your tomato. You know, good mother. Fuck. Botchamania has
turned the Iron Sheik into a cultural phenomenon.
Yes, he has. Oh, thank you, Matthew.
God bless you, Matthew.
Like, the Iron Sheik's Twitter page is hilarious. But yeah, I was thinking more towards like evil, like, you know, kind of just like evil rather than foreigner evil.
Okay,
foreigner evil is kind of subjective. But yeah, like,
Couldn't the Iron Sheik have gotten heat in Iran?
Yeah.
Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan was.
There we go.
He was not an active wrestler, but Bobby Heenan was never a guy. Until he reached the status of "We just love you for being around for."
Yeah, Jesse suggested Iron Sheik just so he could hear the impersonations. Well, there you go. You got it, you bastard. But yeah, X-Men is very much like a professional wrestling sort of thing. Like you're gonna have your guys who are typically faces and heels, but at the same time, you are going to have people that, you know, they can align with one side or the other. And typically, sometimes they'll have a good reason, and the other times, the writers just don't know what they're doing. But yeah, that's Wolverine gets messed up, yes. Well, Mojo was one I wanted to, because he's a morbidly obese man with spider legs. Yeah. And he runs the, he's a slaver who rules the Mojoverse. And the Mojoverse is like
Is Mr. Sugar or Sugar Man in that same kind of vein?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. I might be way off.
Yeah, I don't think Sugarman was. I think Sugarman came from Age of Apocalypse, but don't quote me on
okay.
that. But
he probably did.
He rules the Mojoverse, which is a dimension which, yeah, everybody's addicted to his gladiatorial program, television programs. Apparently, he was a absurdist parody of network executive.
Which nowadays is not that absurd.
No, not very absurd at all.
Look back 30 years, and what people thought was an absurdist parody in the extreme is sadly accurate nowadays.
Yeah. And another group that I actually wanted to look at that we should have mentioned once as soon as we jumped off Magneto was his Brotherhood.
Yes. Well, we've covered a lot of it. I mean, we mentioned Toad briefly, that poor, unlovable bastard. Because nobody likes
Toad. Yeah. I feel like the way they treated him in X-Men Evolution, you remember that show. I mean, it wasn't the best, but at least he was he had personality.
He's the guy who nobody likes and who everybody knows, you know. Ray Park did a great job making him a funt because he could physically do the things that Toad was supposed to do with his mutations. But you think about Toad and what goes into being Toad. I mean, nobody likes that guy. I mean, even the other guys on his team don't like him.
It's not like somebody, you know, the kids on the playground, like, oh, I'm Wolverine and I'm Magneto. And he's one kid, and everybody just looks at the one kid who got pink lash, like, you're Toad. He's like, no.
Anybody but Toad.
The fat kid got picked as the Blob.
Rather be the Blob.
The
Blob for all of the grossness that goes along with him was at least cool because he couldn't be moved. And there's something inherently cool about being the immovable object, even if the
Ultimate version of that character ended up eating people. Like, heroes from the universe. God, that Jeff Loeb, you son of a bitch. Nobody should have let you touch a comic after 2008. God. Like, when they were killing the whole Ultimate, they had an event where they were killing the Ultimate Universe, and it was awful, and, like, fucking Blob straight up ate three people. Like I said, this isn't Bystander. This is, like, I think it was, like, Nightcrawler or somebody got eaten. I'm like, for fuck's sake, people.
You couldn't come up with something better?
What, me? I could come up with something better.
I meant in general.
Jesus.
Like, you know, you're a professional.
Have them
writer.
Sit on them.
You're supposed to come up with a legitimate storyline or a moment, and the best you can do is Blob eats someone.
Yeah.
How
that
do you
is,
have
so,
a job?
It was just so awful to the character, too. I'm just like, seriously, who, why?
At that point, he's a parody of himself.
That is true. That is, oh, man, it's fucking, ah. Yeah, it was just so bad. Oh, and he got his head bitten off by a giant man in the ultimate Universe, too. There you go. So that's,
hey,
isn't that just wonderful? Let's see. Wasp was partially eaten by the Blob. There we go. That just, that's
Pym
wonderful.
Ate him. That makes sense.
Yeah, Hank Pym ate off his head.
He shrunk then. I mean, I assumed the head would stay the size of the Blob's head would be static. So if he shrunk, it would just burst his internal organs, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So he actually had to stay giant man while he digested them.
Yeah, but yeah, like the Brotherhood. We have Blob, Quicksilver, who's awesome. He runs really fast.
There's always a fast guy, you know. Quicksilver's fun. He's fun because of his attitude and his character. He's just such kind of a cocky bastard.
That, and if you get into, like, some of, like, the Ultimate stuff with him and Scarlet Witch, it's kind of creepy.
Just a little.
They get all a wee bit. Scarlet Witch is very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Well, her power is she controls probability, right?
No, that's
long shot. Manipulates probability?
I think hers is she manipulates reality.
No, she does that through magic, because she learns magic.
Yeah. You're right, probability. See, I was thinking long shot when it comes to that.
Well, because I know that because her spells backfire sometimes, because probability is not in her favor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What is that? Like, she roll. I've always kind of wondered what goes on. Like, is there some giant dungeon master who rolls a d20 and, oh, you rolled a 2, your ability backfires.
That happened to me once. I took a swing, rolled a 6, rolled, I think I rolled again and rolled like a 2, and I lost my mace forever. Oh, Lord. She apparently it was probability, but there's also stuff with there's also stuff with like reality bending, dark magic, and shit. And that's how the House of M came.
Well, she
her having a mental.
I'm gonna kind of go off the top of my head here, but she has the ability to wield chaos magic, which is highly unpredictable. But she's only able to do it because she manipulates probability. So her mutant power feeds into this ability to wield magic that no one else can. And then, yeah, she has, like, an end day where she decides that there are no more mutants.
Because she has some sort of, like, mental breakdown, and she's just like, fuck it, I'm still alive, and just breaks everything.
Exactly, which is actually what reawakens Apocalypse, there's not enough mutants.
Yeah, there we go.
If I remember right, he then demands that humanity sacrifice 90% of its population so that there's an equal balance of humans and mutants.
He should have called Thanos on that. Thanos would happily do that.
Oh, yeah, that's why I said we needed Thanos and Apocalypse to team up.
Dude, that would be awesome.
I know. Here, comic book, you know, if there's some unpaid intern listening to this podcast who has the ear of comic book guys, team up Thanos and Apocalypse. All kinds of bad stuff will happen. Which, of course, makes the good guys better, which is why I talk about bad guys, because a super team of Thanos and Apocalypse would lead to, inevitably you'd have to have some great superhero team to take them down, but think about it. You need the amount of evil those two could do. You almost can't, I'm surprised it hasn't been done.
I know, really, like, of all the gigantic mega events, like, those two together would be just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
That's the ultimate Oshment. Like, yeah, we're kind of boned here.
Pretty much. I forgot about Mastermind. Apparently he was part of the original Brotherhood. He can create powers. He can create, his powers create illusions of sight, smell, taste, sound, and touch. But I think one villain that we mentioned yet really is Mystique.
No, we haven't touched on Mystique yet.
She's some. Especially when you get into her backstory of apparently being the mother of Nightcrawler.
Yeah, isn't she like she's Nightcrawler's mother. Isn't she like the adopted mother of Rogue, too?
Yeah, she is. I remember that. Yeah, she is the adopted mother.
Well, because she's the one who got Rogue to absorb all of Carol Danvers' powers and that permanently, and that's how Rogue became, got flight and whatnot.
That's how we got the comic book, or not the comic, sorry, the animated series version of her.
Yeah. There's that for Rogue. But yeah, Mystique is, the ability to shapeshift is just so much, you can have so much fun with it. She changes her physical appearance.
You remember stuff in the movies.
Yeah. In any of them, I'll say this, Mystique has never been miscast. I mean, granted, only two people have played her, but Rebecca Romijn Stamos, at least, I don't know if she did all of her, a large number of her own stunts or whatnot for the first couple of, for those first three movies. But she was able to kind of, have presence with the character. And then, of course, Jennifer Lawrence in First Class. Not my favorite actress in the world, but she was able to bring, some depth and some acting credibility to the character. So, she's a character that you always have fun with, and especially because she she's a bit more hard line than even Magneto, because Magneto is his stance will soften from time to time, and she's always maintained her stance very firmly.
Yeah. I think when Jennifer Lawrence played her, that was before The Hunger Games and stuff. So I was like, who the fuck is?
Yeah,
yeah,
but no, that was
probably
like
Jennifer Lawrence. I think it's more of like, I'm not as seeing as many of her roles as she. I'm like, oh, she's a normal person. That's really awesome and cool. You look at Hollywood, where it's frowned upon, a normal person. Yeah, Mystique's always cool. I guess looking at the rest of her brotherhood, there was Pyro, who was awesome and likes to burn things. that's always pretty, that's pretty much what Pyro was. But Pyro, he burns things. Pyro, Avalanche. Pyro, and I think Avalanche just caused Avalanche. Like, some of these X-Men villains are just like, that's their power and destiny, can see the future. Just like Raven from That's So Raven.
Alright.
So there we go. I think that's all the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, we've covered everything I wanted to cover. Now that was the last one I was going to bring up, if you weren't, was Mystique. And again, just kind of some of the ancillary characters there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, I did look at some of the, see, if I were more of a person for the modern comics, I could start talking about Cassandra Nova, who's a huge villain in the early 90s Grant Morrison X-Men. She's the one that I that massacred Genosha.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, she was controlling the Sentinels and just destroyed everything. You know, apparently it was a city of 16 million reduced to ashes. So.
That's a kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's a little bit a small holocaust of sorts. See, oh, Omega Red,
yeah.
We forgot about him. We forgot about Omega.
Eh.
Random. Cool.
He was cool, but yeah, he was just, to me, he was just like, you know, the Russian bad guy. Maybe it was because, you know, maybe I'd seen too much pro wrestling by the time I kind of became aware of Omega Red. But it was just like, oh, so Nikita Koloff.
Yes, she is. She is Nikita Koloff. I was getting Nikita Koloff and Nikita Khrushchev mixed up.
But no, I mean, he was fun just because, well, what his he had the carbonadium armor, which was the only, like, one of the only substances that can deal with adamantium.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I was just reading about Cassandra Nova, and apparently she is the exact opposite of Charles Xavier. Yay.
Oh, that's always. All right. Well, I think we've covered everything I want to talk about.
Well, did
so,
you
what do you got?
Talk about the Hellfire Club.
Oh yeah, we hadn't touched on Sebastian Shaw. Yeah, you know, I actually first became aware of him when I saw X-Men First Class and Kevin Bacon played him. So yeah, but interesting character, you know. So yeah, he's got immortality because he can manipulate energy to just keep himself alive.
That's always handy.
But it is, and well, and you know, you can do other kinds of fun stuff with energy manipulation as well. But you know, founder of the Hellfire Club, it's a lot of fun with. You know, the whole club, just, you know, all the iterations that it goes through, and, just, you know, the fact that they're just kind of there to cause havoc is,
yeah.
You know, I mean, everyone's been a member of that, too. I mean, Jean Grey was a member because Dark Phoenix was. Sebastian Shaw recruited her to the club, if memory serves. Wolverine's actually a member because, if like, there's some familial, you know, if your father was a member, then you could be, you know. It's a really interesting group of kind of antagonists to deal with, especially since, like, their primary goal seems to be just debauchery. I mean, that's the thing. Every time I see them, or, you know, the soldiers who have the masks, for some reason my immediate thought goes to, huh, so you're, like, the wannabe Satanists that are just in it for the orgies.
That's a good way to put it.
No, but, I mean, well, oh. That actually does remind me about the only other one that I hadn't that deserves at least a mention, because Emma Frost was a member of the Hellfire Club.
Oh, yeah, I was waiting for you to mention her. I always loved that her, that Emma Frost, like, even when she's a good guy, she's always seems to
you can't,
have something.
You never trust her.
Yeah, she always seems to have some evil scheme in her back pocket.
Yeah, and, you know, well, the fact that she can kind of read your mind, she has, she's telepathic, limited but not weak telepathy. So she's, you know, she can read your mind. She can do the diamond skin thing, which is really cool just because, like, hey, you can't hurt me.
Oh, I think, well, what was it? Like, she can actually be shattered. I remember that in some of the comics. Like, she could actually be shattered. And, like, she got shattered once, and it took forever to rebuild her.
Didn't she get broken once, and they had to, like, find all the pieces and reassemble her?
Yeah, and then she became, like, just, like, petrified of being broken again.
She never
did. Yeah, she gets scared to death. I remember she's also the person that always got into Cyclops' pants. Like,
yeah,
always.
She and Cyclops have, after Jean died, they hooked up, I believe.
I think in, like, the new X-Men stuff from the early 2000s, like, if I'm not mistaken, Scott and Jean were, they're married or dating or something, and Emma was still getting all up in there, and Jean wasn't using her psychic powers on Scott, because, you know, trust.
Yeah. Which was immediately, you know, yeah, I'll trust you, and you'll then be manipulated by another psychic.
Exactly. You know, that's why you don't date psychics. That's why you don't date psychic chicks. Nothing good is going to come out of that.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. And just a minor note, God, Emma, for as awesome a character as Emma Frost is, she was the weakest part of X-Men First Class. And I don't know if that was because January Jones sucks or if she was poorly written.
God, she was so awful. Like, she's got a nice set of cans, but she is not acting at all.
You know, you have to change your facial expression at some point, don't you?
I was like, Jesus, she just looks like she smelled a fart the whole time.
Well, plus,
she was kind of scowling.
Whatever they did with her, the CGI to make her in diamond form, for some reason I didn't think it translated well. Well, you know, that might just really be me and my personal sensibilities.
Well, I mean, it might be if you're right. I didn't notice. Yeah, I remember the actor in the middle. I saw the movie. I'm like, ugh. Out of all these really good actors in this movie, you got
everybody brings it. You know, that's one of those movies where everybody does their job well.
Yeah,
even
and
if
you
it,
got misses,
yeah.
Not chewing the scenery.
Yeah, it's kind of weak there.
Oh man, yeah, she was bad. Like that movie was awesome. I think that her and like my one complaint was when they killed was it Darwin.
I think
when Darwin died, I'm like, you know, it's really sad, but at the same time, we've only known the kid for like 20 minutes. We got to only know him through montages, and while this is really sad, I'm like, I just don't get quite as deep of an effect as they're wanting. But, I mean, yeah, that was still a great movie, and I'm really looking forward to the next one, especially because I actually like the Wolverine. I know a lot of people didn't.
The third act of the Wolverine is just your generic action finale when the first two-thirds were something different.
Yeah, the first two-thirds, I was like, wow, this is really good because he's vulnerable. He's got to deal with that, and he's got to deal with a lot of other things. Yeah. But then that third act, I was like, when he got his powers back, I was like, damn it.
He gets his powers back, and here's the Silver Samurai, and he loses the claws.
And we, I forgot about that. And we come to find out who the Silver Samurai was, and I'm like, oh. Huh.
It's, you know, the whole third act is like, okay, we need to turn this into a generic action movie.
It was still really good when you consider what we had, which was Will.i.am as Wraith.
That's true. That's a very true sentiment. I think that hits everyone I wanted to talk about. So let's close this up. What do you got to plug this week, Coop?
What don't I have to plug? I guess I'll start with last night's podcast, which ended up being two podcasts, the Blog Talks Dick. Jason Lee and I, who called in, did our show from the cheat seats where we talked about things such as the reports from the Dolphins bullying scandal, Sochi being a piece of shit, the NBA
wandering the hallways of the hotel.
Oh, well, apparently that was Jimmy Kimmel. Like, apparently
okay.
he got us again, bastard.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's see. The NBA All-Star game being shit on shit. I mean, seriously, it was kind of like the Pro Bowl from like last year where nobody really played defense. So it was just like a boring score fest.
Well, plus, I was not watching it, but I was on Twitter when they did the remember everyone being pissed off about the new dunk contest rules or everything that kind of went with the All-Star game there.
Yeah, it was the problem with that was instead of them giving like a true dunk champion, they did it 3-on-3. They did it team style.
It's a solo event.
Yeah, they did it team style, and then they let the best dunk be decided by the fans. Yeah.
Solo crap.
Exactly. See, yeah, it was a load of shit. But yeah, we did that podcast, and then like an hour later, we did a 15-minute plug show because we were just wrapping up, and Blog Talk kicked both of us off. Blog Talk, he disappeared because he was hosting. He disappeared, then I got kicked off, my phone did, and then both of us are trying desperately to log back into Blog Talk, and it's just like, no, go fuck yourself. It's not going to work today. So we were just like, yeah, let's just start a 15-minute show where we plug shit. Brilliant marketing. Exactly. And I know. It's like, we did, totally. And ironically, it's mostly my plugs since I do 15 podcasts. Seriously. Oh. And then there's, speaking of podcasts, there's my Sentai Rider podcast about all things Tokusatsu, which is your Power Rangers, Sentai, Kamen Rider, Ultraman. We might even do some Godzilla when the movie comes up.
Looking forward to that movie.
Oh, I so am too. Yeah, we might be doing some Godzilla. We'll just have to see how things go because we're trying to do two episodes a week since there's two slots open on Radlich's broadcasting network, and I'm going to try using those slots to the full advantage. Believe it or not, I actually got Teasley watching the current Kamen Rider series because he thought our podcast made it. He's like, dude, you know, y'all make it sound so interesting and cool, so I'm going to start watching it. And he started watching it yesterday before the podcast, and I talked to him like an hour later. He's like, man, I'm about to start episode 3. This is really good. I was like, what did I tell you? So, yeah, that let's see, the latest episode will be coming out on Saturday, where we review the latest Sentai series, Shuden Sentai Kyoryu. It was really awesome. There was dancing and dinosaurs. Yeah, that is
more dinosaurs.
Yeah, more dinosaurs. They do like a dinosaur series every 10 years.
You got it. Yeah, it becomes popular again every 10 years or so. You got to throw another dinosaur one in there.
Well, I mean, dinosaurs never lose popularity. You know, like some things kids always are interested in, especially boys. But, and let's see, that'll be that. And then on Monday, I think we'll be doing Kamen Rider Gaiman episodes 16 through 18. So, you know, look over here on the Rising Legend Broadcasting Network for that, and as well as look at our Facebook page at facebook.com/SentaiRiderPodcast. Like us. I'd really appreciate that. It's pretty awesome. And this Tuesday, you'll be having Metal Hammer of Doom will be coming back, where Mark Radlich and I will be reviewing Power and Glory by Grand Magus. I love Grand Magus. They are awesome. Which, speaking of stuff, I did mean to ask you, when the new Sabaton album comes out, I'm totally getting you on for that.
I don't know enough about music, but...
I think you could help me fill an hour about, especially Sabaton. I know you like them.
I enjoy metal. You know, I'm not big into, you know, my subsets of metal I tend to, you know, power metal, speed metal, things like that. I don't know. I'm just, it's weird. I'm not, there are certain aspects and in some cases certain songs that I'm just not, you know, that they don't speak to me. But, hey, if you just need help killing an hour or so, I'm probably down.
No, yeah, I'm certainly trying to find people because when Mark Lee, it is very hard to find a co-host for that show. I remember on our super secret forum, I was like, hey guys, anybody want to do anything? And there was one week nobody showed up, so I'm like, ah, shit.
Yeah, so depending on what you're doing, you know, let me know a little bit in advance. I'll listen to some songs, and if it's something that I want to talk about or I'm able to speak at least cogently on, I'll definitely help you kill some time.
Yeah, well, hey, I'd definitely appreciate that. Trying to think. In terms of my stuff on Radlers and Broadcasting Network, that's all. But also, you could find the Cooperative Multiplayer Podcast, which will be live on the Wrestling to the Max page on Spreaker.com on pretty much every Saturday at midnight. You know, Saturday going into Sunday. Just need for clarification. It's myself, Sean Garmer, and Daniel Anderson talking video games. It's a pretty good time. Usually, a good 2 hours of, you know, just kind of fun rambling about video games and other things. It'll be posted on Stephen Randall's TWNEF Dark page afterwards because he's on break since, you know, he had a kid and all. Congrats, Randall. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Yeah, he'll be back sooner or later, and I'll troll the shit out of him. But until then, it'll be on the Wrestling to the Max page. And then finally, on 411mania.com in the Music Zone, usually every Monday/Tuesday, though I always get it in late, always, the Hammer of Doom News Report, which is your home for all things heavy metal in terms of news, new releases, free music, all that stuff. I've kind of been missing for the past 2 weeks because I turned my column in, but it didn't save or I didn't press save. And then I was like, oh, hey, Jeremy, where's my column? And he's like, oh, you haven't sent it in. So I'm like, oh, let me go to WordPress and, you know, copy and paste it. And then half my column wasn't there. And it wasn't even the easy stuff, like, you know, answering comments or like a band of the week or, you know, album titles for the week. No, it was all the news. It was the important stuff.
So
go look for that on Monday or Tuesday in the Music Zone and you'll get 2-week-old news. I thought about just like scrapping it and doing, you know, just catching up. I'm like, you know what? I pretty much have this thing halfway done. I am not going to I'm not going to do that much work. I'm in college, damn it.
I only have so much time.
I have 4 podcasts to run, Peep. And when you look at the Sentai podcast, and we're doing 2 a week, that's technically 5.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is all for me in terms of plugging.
All right, I'll get mine out of the way quickly here. Every Friday in the MMA zone of 411mania.com, you can find Locked in the Guillotine. It's an MMA news report. I review fight cards. I preview fight cards. I talk about news. Live right now, I review UFC Fight Night 36. I preview UFC 170, Rousey versus McMahon. And I talk about Gilbert Melendez possibly going to Bellator and the UFC's new bonus structure, wherein there are no more KO or submission of the night. And they wonder why there aren't finishes. Now,
dude,
instead
how?
of instead of a KO and a submission of the night, there are two performance of the night bonuses that they hand out. Theoretically, this to have, you know, if you have a card where there's all, where, you know, you have like two finishes and they're both submissions, this lets you recognize, you know, two different submission wins as opposed to just one with one sub of the night. Or if, you know, you only have knockouts and no finishes, or God forbid we have no finishes and a bunch of decisions, if you want to recognize, you know, a specific fighter for having a great performance. So theoretically, that's what that.
You know, I mean, Jesus. If you look at all the cards that have been since this new year, I'm pretty sure we don't even have a full card's worth of finishes.
Pretty sure you.
I mean, I've not watched many of the cards because I forget about them. But I think I'm better off without remembering some weeks.
Some weeks, that's probably true. I, incidentally, for UFC 170, which comes to you live this Saturday, I have live coverage over on 411mania.com. So if you can't watch it, or you just want to read my coverage or insult my scoring or see if I post a funny picture of a chicken, head on over to the MMA zone of 411mania. I have one that I haven't used, and I'm just waiting for an appropriately bad decision. The current edition of The Long Road to Ruin talks Back to the Future. I was the special co-host while Sean Comer is on sabbatical. So Mark and I spent a couple of hours talking about Back to the Future, the whole trilogy. It was awesome. I had a great time. Their upcoming episode, 2 weeks from Tuesday, a week from this Tuesday, is the Missing in Action series. Pat Mullen will be co-hosting along with Mark Bradlich. And next week, here on Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, since I'm looking at comic villains, I had a different kind of schedule planned out in my head for how this would go, but I forgot that Mark Bradlich, our benefactor here on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, is going on sabbatical because his second child is being born, which takes precedence over everything else, as it should. But there's a couple of characters that he insisted he be a part of when I do them. One of them I don't mind holding off on, but if I'm talking about comic book villains, I have to talk about the Joker, and Mark insisted he be part of that one. So next weekend, I know you want in on that one too, Coot.
Everybody wants it.
I know, everybody wants to talk about Joker. So I'm going to hash something out, but next week here, Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern, 7 my time, Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, we'll be tackling that greatest of Batman foes, the sadistic clown, in all of his various iterations. We're talking about the Joker next week, so I hope to see you all here for that one. That's going to do it for my plug. So for Robert Cooper, who has a dozen podcasts and a great column, I'm Robert Winfrey, your authority on evil. I'm saying good night. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, bad guys make good guys seem better just by comparison, so thank them for that. I'll see you guys next week.
So say good night to the bad guys.